What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
Hello, one. Hello, all. I am Ray Harkins, and you are listening to another episode of 100 Words or Less, the podcast. I'm sitting here recording this on a beautiful Monday, and got a candle lit in the studio, and it's just it's feeling Monday vibes, as they say on the internet and what the kids say in hashtags or whatever. But anyways, that's not why you're coming here to listen to the latest social media jargon or jabber that's happening. What you are coming here for is a thoughtful and sometimes critical, sometimes funny discussion about independent music, where people have come from, what it is that attracts them to it, and why they still stay involved. And that's exactly what we're doing here today. And part of this whole themed month of amazing women that are involved in independent music, that is what we're doing here. And we have Rachel Rosen on the show. And she is the guitarist for awesome, awesome hardcore bands, Indecision, Most Precious Blood, Wage of Sin. And she now lives in Southern California. She works in the medical industry. She's in pathology, which... I'm going to go ahead. I can't remember if we actually addressed this in the interview, but basically she was the person who committed or not committed, performed, that's a better way of putting it, who performed a biopsy on my wife's cancer. And she was able to share some information with me, just like friend to friend, nothing that was, breaking any rules. But she was able to share some information with me that put my mind a little bit at ease. In regards to what my wife was going through. And yeah, I'll never be able to thank her enough for that. So it was just, again, one of those random music connections that you never know will circle back to you and provide some unbelievable, unbelievable information for you. But anyways, so that's what we're doing here. But I have some important business I would like to share with you. That, well, it's not even business. These are just things that I personally believe in because, you know, the show does ads, the show does advertisements, but I want you, the listener, to know the only way that these things are getting on the show is because I personally back them, endorse them, think it's something that you should pay attention to, you should spend your hard-earned money on, you should spend your time on, whatever it is. So that is a thing that I want you to know. So that's incredibly important to me because I'm not just up here chilling for stuff that's like, oh yeah, like you'll never hear you know, an ad about, you know, a beef jerky delivery box. I don't eat meat, so why would I endorse that? Or, you know, some an alcohol brand that's being interested in, you know, paying a lot of money to pay to get your attention. I'm not doing that because I don't drink. And these are things, basically, if I don't believe in, they're not getting on here. Anyways, I'll get off my soapbox. But let me get back on my soapbox because here's some things that you need to listen to and pay attention to. So Lowercase Noises, they provide the theme music for this show. And he has a new record coming out called The Swiss Illness. It's on May 19th. Unbelievable record. I've been privileged enough to work alongside of him to get this record out to the world. And I'm just incredibly excited about it. So, yeah, lowercasenoises.com. You can find some amazing pre-order packages. And go do that because it's beautiful, beautiful music. In this day and age where it's really difficult to slow down, have a quiet moment, have some thoughtful, introspective, reflective music to listen to, that's exactly what he provides. And it's just gorgeous. I just love it. So please do that. And then on top of that, too. So like I've mentioned in last week's episode, Descendants are one of my favorite bands of all time. And when they approached me to promote Everything Sucks, the re-release on Epitaph, I was like, yes, immediately. If you want me to do a whole show on why Everything Sucks is absolutely incredible, I could do that. But they're like, no, we don't need to do that. But what I am offering you is, so they re-released it on vinyl. And it's remixed by Bill Stevenson and Jason Livermore. And it's a limited edition pressing. There's only 500 of these copies that exist. And frankly, they have come to my show because they feel like you, the listener, would probably be into this. So go to kingsroadmerch.com/100words. That's the number 100. And you are given access. Like, this isn't just a link that is, you know, everybody can visit. Well, technically, yes, but this isn't a color of vinyl that everybody does not have access to. So please go there and you will be able to buy the limited edition exclusive white vinyl bundle, which is only available to you, the listener. You, I'm pointing at you right now. So it's an unbelievable record. It sounds so good. Remastered, remixed by these amazing people who have been close to the band for quite some time. And, you know, not only close to the band, but in the band. Okay. So please go to kingsroadmerch.com/100words and you will get yourself a beautiful, beautiful piece of vinyl only available to my listeners. So there we go. And what else do I need to tell you about? No other plugs, right? Yeah, no, I don't think so. But yeah, so my wife is back at work. Thank you for those of you that you know, check in occasionally over email to be like, hey, just want to make sure you're doing all right. We have another test to go into as far as May is concerned, and I'm nervous about it because, you know, that could put us back a few steps, or hopefully it'll give my wife another 3 months of like, hey, I don't need to worry about that. So fingers crossed that she will continue to be, you know, the cancer will not be residing in her system. That is what I'm hoping and praying and everything else. So keep those positive thoughts coming her direction, and I appreciate that. So back to Rachel. I went over to her house. She lives not too far from me, and I've always wanted her on the show, and finally was, you know, putting together this month worth of awesome women in music, and I was like, she is perfect for it because she's been on the ground floor for a lot of amazing bands, and she just has a really cool perspective about life and the fact that, you know, she was able to pursue a medical career all while all these bands were, you know, touring and going on. So it was a very fun conversation. And we did this in her backyard. And there are many times where you will hear her dogs wrestling in the background. And there was no fighting. You know, the dogs were just wrestling and having fun. So yeah, don't be alarmed that it's like, oh, her and I were just talking and completely ignoring the dogs, you know, play wrestling in the background. So yeah, I've edited some of it out for you know, clarity, because there's at one point we were like, oh wait, hold on. Like, guys, calm down, okay? But anyways, thank you very much, Rachel, for having me over at your house. And yeah, that's all we got. So here is my conversation with Rachel, and I'm talking to you. Enjoy. usually I start these things off with my first kind of like entry point to you, your music and everything like that. But, you know, since my entry point to both you and Tom were at the same juncture in regards to, you know, watching you guys play at Chain Reaction in front of like 10 people. Because that was like, that was a showcase for Revelation,
yes.
Right? Yes.
Yeah. Remember it.
Who was the person at Rev that was like talking to you guys?
So it was Jason.
It was Jason Upright?
Yes.
Yes. Great dude. Great dude.
Yeah. And I mean, they didn't hold it against us. At least we still put something out with them.
Totally. It was like, well, wasn't that technically?
It was Crisis.
I was about to say that was Rob's label, but still.
Oh, but it was Jason that he was the one.
He was the facilitator.
Yeah. And yeah. I think we were thinking it was going to be an offer for an actual album. And then they're like, no, when we do a split with Shiloh, we're like, ah, okay, fine.
Yeah. Whatever. You're like, well, we'll take that. But then I also, in watching you guys, like watching, I also take and played Furnace Fest 2002. Mm-hmm. You guys played that as well. And I just remember it was watching, because I hadn't seen Indecision with any of the other iterations beyond that show. Mm-hmm. And so then watching you guys up there again, it was like, it was so interesting to see the consistency of just like, oh, like, you know, I'd seen you guys, whatever, obviously, you know, 3 or 4 years prior to that, or even longer ago than that, but it was just consistent, like in the vibe and the feel, even though both bands were, you know, they're different, but
that was sort of a strange show for us, though.
The Furnace Fest?
Yeah.
Right, because it was a very Christian based
yes.
music
and we
festival.
Had people from Atlanta tearing up Bibles during our sets.
I do remember that.
On us,
no, you were not. And I mean, maybe that gave you the overtone of just being like, all right, we're just going to like get through this show.
I do remember. Do you remember the bottles before Andrew WK? That crazy bottle. I don't know what you call it, but everyone's throwing bottles in the air for like 5 minutes. That was nuts.
That was nuts. I remember. That was probably the Andrew WK set was one of the most collectively joyous things.
It was fun. And
I've
that was
seen.
Like, that was probably, I don't know. Was that his biggest? No, it wasn't his biggest yet.
As far as shows are concerned?
No, I mean as far as how big he got.
Oh, no. I think that was like just riding up. Yeah. But I think he was already playing cool shows, but then I think the fact that he was able to just be like, oh my gosh, like this is like what a hardcore show is like. But the point I was trying to make was the fact that there was, you know, you guys were essentially, you know, the same band as far as like the collective songwriting structure, but
yeah,
then
it didn't change too much.
Right. And I mean, I presume that like when you guys started to put together Most Precious Blood, it was basically like, you know, I presume it was like intentional to be like, well, we like this, so we're going to stick with this kind of style.
Well, I think it was just that Justin was sort of the main writer and he writes a certain way and he just kept writing.
Right.
I mean, I tried to contribute a little bit more, like especially with Nothing in Vain, the fact that I got to play bass gave me a chance to at least contribute more than necessarily an Indecision where it was like just sort of a battle with him.
Right. You couldn't get in much.
No, I was like, hey, can I write something? No. And it wasn't exactly like that. It just, you know, everyone, when you come into a band that has a set person who writes everything, everyone still sort of looks to them to, you know.
Yeah, be the main
guy who writes everything. And, you know, and I'm like, hey, I have a riff here and there. And it's like, oh.
Yeah, they're like, that's cute.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, we're going to go back to this now.
we'll work on your ideas for the B-side record.
Yeah. So at least I felt like that was maybe a little bit different with Most Precious Blood as far as just more, I mean, not that, you know, I love Bago, but, you know, his bass playing was more just following the guitar for the most part.
Right, right.
And I sort of, the way I played bass, I always tried to do something totally different from the guitar whenever I could.
Right, right.
So, I think that was maybe a little bit different. But I think at that point, at Furnace Fest, I wasn't even playing bass anymore.
Right.
So,
yeah.
I was back on guitar again.
You were back on guitar.
Yeah.
You were playing your prerequisite instrument that you'd been playing. Starting with Most Precious Blood, like, because the momentum was relatively quick as far as, like, you know, you guys signing to Trustkill. This is amazing. I've usually never been assaulted by a dog. This is beautiful. Because the momentum was pretty quick as far as you guys getting noticed and recognized.
Yeah, it was definitely a lot quicker than with Indecision. But I think it was just the work that we did with Indecision, I guess it was just the right time that
right
when we started Most Precious Blood, like, we didn't have to put as much work in it.
Right.
At the beginning, at least to like at least to get on shows and to get tours and stuff like that.
Right. Get your foot in the door.
Yeah. It was a little bit easier.
And did you feel like the intention, like once you guys started to feel like there was obviously people paying attention to what you were doing, was the notion that you were going to make this into a thing, you know?
We weren't. Like, we were just going to do it, like, part-time at first because we were all... Well, at least Justin and I were still sort of burnt out on touring from indecision. Just, we weren't really that interested in it.
Right.
And then, I guess we just started getting offered things. And once we started doing, like, little things here and there, we're like, oh, like, we miss touring. Let's just go on tour again. So we just got roped into it again because we loved doing it then. And
right.
With Most Precious Blood, there was times that we were actually getting, like, paid for shows that we could get to the next show and get, like, a right. decent van and get, like...
Oh, my gosh, we yeah. got $500 for yeah. the show. Right, right, right.
So it was sort of like, okay, like, this week maybe we can actually sort of live off this without having to come home and immediately go right back to work and...
Right.
So I think that also drew us in more, too.
It was a little move.
That was no, a catch.
It was a catch.
Wow.
We're good. Yeah, maybe I'll put these cords yeah. up.
You're never safe with a crazy
no,
dog around.
Not at all. Yeah, I guess, I mean, it makes sense from the motivational aspect where it's just like, oh, like, I guess let's chase this momentum yeah. and see where it goes.
Because, yeah. I mean, even with Indecision, I had no intention of touring the way we did, like, when I started, like, oh, I guess I can't really say that. It was, I don't know, the whole touring thing I just sort of fell into anyway. So I just sort of, when opportunities came up, I was like, okay, I'll just go do it because who knows... Like, I might not ever have this chance again, so I'm just going
right.
to keep going with it until I feel like it's time that I'm done with it. So,
right.
So yeah, with Most Precious, well, we were still pretty young, and we were just like, oh, let's just go do it.
Yeah, let's just try it. Did you, I mean, it sounds like the way that you're speaking about touring, did you grow to like it, or did you immediately take to it, and then, like you said, you know, once you're out there for 250 shows in a row or whatever, it's kind of...
My very first tour that was not with Indecision or anything, I did not like it.
What did you not like about it?
Well, I went to Europe for 2 months with a band called SFA.
Oh, okay,
and
yeah, yeah.
It was...
That's a long tour.
Yeah. I'd never been on tour in my life before, and to just all of a sudden be put in this situation with people you don't know that well, and to be in Europe for 2 months, and back then, you know, you couldn't, like, you had no contact with anyone from home. I had,
yeah, you're
like,
so cut off.
Yeah. You know, I wrote letters and had, like, calling cards.
Right.
And I was miserable. I wanted to go home so badly, and...
This was like mid-90s, I'm guessing?
Yeah, this was right. 1996.
Okay, yeah.
And I just started going out with Justin, another guitar player in Indecision.
Right.
People who don't know.
Sure.
And I just, like, really missed him, and I was, like, I don't know. I felt very isolated and very, it was just, I wish I could describe, it was just a really awful feeling.
Yeah. Well, especially too, because like you said, you're not... It's not like the band was family to you because, you know, that's usually what ends up maybe making you feel a little bit better
yeah.
being separate.
They were all a lot older than me for the most part. And I mean, the singer, like, he tried
sure.
for the most part. And there were some things that went on that tour that were not right. And little incidents that happened that really just... like, I basically ended up quitting the band, like, the last day of that
sure.
tour. I was like, I can't do this anymore because
right.
certain people in this band are crazy, and I can't be around them.
I can't be put in situations
yeah.
like
yeah,
this.
Yeah, I was in some bad situations in that tour, so.
But
as
then,
a woman, which I don't normally talk about, but.
Well, I mean, that's, you know? there are certain things where it's, you know, I mean, the notion that, you know, females playing in a, you know, completely male dominated music genre and then, you know, just being like one of the boys and stuff like
yeah.
that. And like, you know, that notion is fine as far as like just treating people like human beings as opposed to
yeah.
their actual sex. But then when it comes to the debaucherous nature, that's when it can be like, what are you like?
Yeah.
Don't do that.
So that, yeah. But then it was like, I think I did that tour. And then the next tour I did, which I just went along with Indecision on their first tour, was Shut Down in
okay.
1996 also. It was like in the summer. And that, I mean, that even though it was like basically like we drove to Florida and stayed at the guitar player for Shutdown's like grandparents' house in Boca Raton or something.
Yeah.
So for
like a road trip.
Yeah. So we played a bunch of some shows in Florida. But that was like fun because it was that I had a good time on. And then I just kept tagging along with them until I finally joined the band.
Right, right.
Because when I was playing in Millhouse didn't really do any tours until I was already in Indecision. So.
Sure, sure.
And then it just, they're always fun for the most part, as long as you had to keep a sense of humor about things that went on.
Right, whatever situation you were in.
Yeah, there's a lot of crappy things that happened.
Of course.
But it was just the traveling part. I realized how much I like to see things and...
They're
just playing.
Absolute bloodbath back here. No, just kidding.
That's K9's vocal practice.
Exactly.
So I just, you know, I would always plan, like, see where we were going and be like, oh, well, when we're in this city, we should go see this. And when we're in, you know, let's go to the Grand Canyon here, let's go to this park. And I would always...
You were the planner.
Yes, I was the travel agent for the band.
That's good. Well, because you always need... One person needs to be motivated in the band to do that. Because otherwise, you just end up, you know, sitting in a van in a parking lot.
Yeah, and I always was fine. I was like, we have to go see this. We have to go see that. And,
right,
you know,
right.
So.
Did, because that sometimes that can turn against you where, you know, you motivate everybody to do something and then the thing that you do, like you may appreciate, but no one else does.
I think they appreciate it.
Okay.
They
did. I'm internalizing this because I did that for Plymouth Rock, and that's like one of the most uninspiring rock. I mean,
I had never even been there,
dude.
Which is a shame.
It is such a tiny rock,
really?
In a cage. And it was one of those things where it was like, you know, like we were staying in Salem and like dragged the guys out there, and everyone was like, "Don't we want to fucking go, right? This sucks." And then we get there, and I'm like, yeah, this does suck. Like, I'm so sorry. I missed you of like 2.5 hours.
I mean, there was a couple, like one of the funny ones was, I've been dying to see Death Valley, and we had one day off between San Francisco and Las Vegas. So I was like, okay, if we all wake up at like, leave at like 6 a.m. from San Francisco, I think we can get to Death Valley before sundown.
Right.
And at least see a little bit of it. No, we got there just as the sun was going down. I got everyone up super early. We get to Death Valley. It's dark.
Right. And then you just see a whole lot of black.
Yep. So everyone was just like, oh. So we ended up just driving to Vegas.
You're like,
I was like, I'm sorry.
Thanks, Rachel. Thanks.
And I drove the whole way, like going as fast as I was like, we can't stop anywhere. We have to just keep going.
Just a total taskmaster for like 8 hours.
Yeah.
Like, this is what we're doing.
Yeah. And didn't get to see it, but.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different things that stress us out, right? Like maybe it's something really, really small, like, man, that parking space, it's always taken. And I wish that I would be able to like get it instead of, you know, this person that maybe, you know, is the most courteous and considerate. I know that's something very random, but it's true. We all experience different things throughout the day that trigger us in so many different ways. And there are many times where I have been like, I wish that I had a spot or a repository for me to, you know, get this stuff off of my chest. Because if you bottle it up, that is no bueno. And then all of a sudden you explode on a coworker or a friend or a family member being like, the parking spot. And people are like, what are you talking about? That is where therapy comes in. And I love working with BetterHelp because I'm a huge advocate for therapy, broadly speaking. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, please give BetterHelp a try. It is so easy because it's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you do is fill out a brief questionnaire and then you get matched with a licensed therapist. And if you are not vibing with the therapist for any reason, you can switch it out at no additional charge. Get things off of your chest with BetterHelp. So visit betterhelp.com/Ray today to get 10% off of your first month. That's betterhelp.com/Ray.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If
you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
All right, pardon the interruption, but I have something incredibly exciting to tell you about. So, CNN, like, clearly you've heard of them. Do you know they do, like, these 8 to 12 to 15-part documentaries on certain slices of life? This one I cannot be more excited about. This one is called Soundtracks, Songs That Define History. So, like, you know, the fall of the Berlin Wall, the March on Washington, Hurricane Katrina, the aftermath of 9/11, and the Stonewall Riots, all of these things are seismic events that have shaped our lives. And this Thursday, April 20th, comes a new 8-part original series about the moments that changed the world and the songs that became the soundtracks of our time. And it's unbelievable, because you know who produced this? The Rock, Dwayne Johnson. Like, this dude is a talent among many talents. And the series is called Soundtracks, Songs That Define History. You can hear the music of the resistance, music of hope, music of unity, and the songs that are etched in our memories forever. Because that is why we love music so much. You listen to a particular song, it takes you back to a certain period of time in your life, all the events swirling around it, and I cannot wait to watch this show. Tune in on April 20th at 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time, only on CNN, and you will be able to watch this 8-part miniseries. Set your DVR, stop what you're doing right now, make sure you're watching this thing. I cannot wait, and you should also join me in this, right? Yeah, because you love music, and you love history, so please, do that up. Thank you, CNN. Thank you for supporting the show.
Going back further in your life, so you born and raised in New Jersey.
Yes.
From what I've read and know about you, your upbringing was definitely very, typical as far as, you know, the family structure was concerned. You had an older sister that passed away when you were like 10, 11?
Yeah.
Okay. And it seems like that's obviously a pivotal moment in anybody's life when you lose. How much older was your sister?
She was 6 years older than me. And
okay.
Then I have another sister who is about 4.5 years
okay.
older than me.
I'm going to presume that you were pretty tight with her, with your older sister, or was it just kind of like...
It was hard because, you know, my two oldest ones, they were really close because I was the afterthought that was sort of like an accident.
Of course.
You know,
you're the gift. Right.
Yeah. Like 4.5 years later after them.
Sure.
So there was a lot. And basically, from the time I was born, my oldest sister was already sick.
Okay.
So it was always like a weird thing growing up with one sister who's, you know, who your parents have to constantly take care of them.
Of course.
And so I think just my entire childhood was sort of had that going on. So it wasn't even like I had, like, you know, 8 years where it was like, you know, normal and then something happened. It was just basically my whole life.
Sure.
So, but yeah, I mean, after, you know, we all handle it different ways. And I think because I was so young, my parents didn't tell me a lot what was going on. So when they knew she was dying for like a month and they didn't tell me. And I was just sort of like, oh, like, she's fine. Go feed her some ice cream. Go hang out. And meanwhile, like, she's like, you know, for one period, she can only remember how to curse at you. So I just go see her and it'd just be like a barrage of like curses. Like,
sure.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I didn't mean to upset you.
And so when she finally died, for me, it was like a shock, but everyone else sort of knew it was coming and had time to prepare. I was like, oh, and then I didn't. It was something where I just basically, it happened, and I sort of just tried to forget the whole thing. So right. I spent a long time, probably like a lot of middle school and high school, pretending like I wouldn't even tell anybody about her.
Really?
Yeah. I would just be like, oh, I have one sister. And if someone like was happened to see a picture of her in my house, I'd be like, that's my cousin. Or
right, right. Yeah, it just didn't exist.
Yeah, because people would be like, oh, what's wrong with this person? Because they were, you know, she had chemo, her hair was like messed up and stuff. And so that's how I dealt with it for probably till I was about 16. And then it sort of backfired on me. And because when she died, when she was 16. So when I hit 16, all kinds of, you know, things can go when you have a sister who died and you're that age. You deal with a lot of like guilt that like, okay, well now I'm this age, am I gonna like make it past this age? And
right.
The guilt of sort of making it past that age and being healthy and everything. So
right. Like you didn't get to experience this, so yeah. I feel guilty about yes. that.
So there I had a rough, probably rough couple of years, but that was around the time I got into hardcore also. And I think that's how it all sort of happened, because I started went through like a really dark period.
Sure.
And that was the kind of music I would listen to. I was like, oh, I was like, this is sort of more how I feel. And
was it like when you say dark, like this was more like you, I mean, cause people automatically assume that because you're listening to aggressive music, like you're angry. So mm-hmm. like, was this coming from a place of anger or just like, I just don't want to exist on this planet?
It was both.
Okay.
Yeah. I just was like, I just felt like going away. Like I didn't have a right to, like, well, she didn't get any further. So why should I?
Oh,
so,
right.
So there's a lot of like self-destructive behavior and doing just, it was bad.
Sure. Sure.
But you know, I got help eventually. And,
did your parents recognize that you were
oh, yeah.
off completely off the deep end?
Yeah, they saw it.
Okay.
And there was a lot, like I was drinking a lot and like uh-huh. drinking like blatantly, like at like, I remember like getting completely wasted at like my grandmother's 70th birthday party. And I like passed out. For the party.
Right, at a
like,
family function, yeah, underage so, drinking. Yeah. Like, yeah, that's clearly a cry for help.
But, and you know, there was a lot of other things. I basically, like, didn't talk to them. I would, like, come home from school. I would go to my room.
Right.
I wouldn't come out of my room.
Until school the next morning.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
They would make me go eat dinner with them, but I wouldn't talk to them.
And sure.
There was just, it was a bad time.
Yeah, yeah, that's brutal.
And then,
And so with like you said, with music that was helping you, but then also like, you know, did you go to therapy? Did you go
yes,
to a
I
hospital?
Yes, I okay. went to therapy for a long time. And also, I think I started playing bass and guitar when I was like 13.
Right.
So that also sort of gave me a little focus to
little
try,
outlet.
Like, yeah. So I would write songs. I would write a lot of lyrics that were all just like the most miserable.
Of course. Super, super
yeah.
depressing. Yeah.
yeah,
sure.
And, so that, but it helped.
Yeah.
And I think the only, you know, once I sort of became more comfortable with the whole situation and started, instead of like trying to like pretend she didn't exist, be comfortable that she existed. And,
right.
you know, yes, it was a huge, her death and like her whole illness was a big shaping force of who I am today. Because if that had never happened, I could have been a completely different person because.
Of course. You wouldn't have to have experienced that.
Yeah.
Right.
But, you know, so I'm much more comfortable with it now. And the only lingering thing I had was a lot of, like, anxiety for a while over people, other people dying. Like,
sure.
I would, not even, like, because, I mean, she died. It wasn't, like, a freak accident or anything. But I had really bad anxiety about if someone said they were, like, going home and they were going to call me and they didn't call me.
Right. You were like, something's
yeah,
wrong.
I'm like, they're dead.
Worst case scenario.
Exactly.
Right.
And
right.
I would start hysterically crying, having panic attacks, just
wow.
immediately assuming the person was dead. There was like
right.
no in between.
Right.
So, so that happened. That was like an on and off situation probably up until like, I don't know, maybe like 5 years ago. I don't know what happened that I sort of managed
you felt like,
to
you
finally
felt like
get
you turned
a hold.
A corner.
Yeah, yeah, I finally got a hold. I'm like, no, I was like, just because someone doesn't call you does not mean they're dead.
Right.
Like, it's okay.
There's probably maybe like two other reasons before that. So yeah, that could start falling a little bit farther down the list and you're not. Yeah. I find it interesting too, just because, you know, you're, I mean, your parents come from a medical background as far as their professions are concerned.
Yeah.
You obviously are in a medical profession as well. And you know, you've dealt with death for most of your life in regards to not only.
And I think that was a big reason I ended up in pathology unknowingly because of her disease. And then, just being, I had watched my grandparents die when I was very young too. And, I think just wanting to know more about the human body and the whole like disease process and everything, and just doing autopsies and being able to see exactly how everything sort of works, and I just basically immerse myself in death everywhere.
Right. Well, I mean, it does. Clearly, it takes a certain disposition for somebody to be able to not only deal with something like that, like death, and being able to, you know, deal with cadavers and deal with, like you said, disease. But I mean, you can, in hearing you speak about it, it's you feel like you're, you know, probably arming yourself with knowledge that most people, in a general sense, don't get to equip themselves with.
Which can be hard too when you see people around you doing things that, and you know exactly what the outcome is going to be for them.
Right, right.
And you just like drives
I know
you
what
crazy.
This is contributing.
Yeah. And I'm like, I know what's going to happen to you. I'm like, I'm sorry. I've seen it a million times. And this is what's going to happen if you don't change something.
Sure.
And
I can tell you what your organ is going to look like. Right.
Exactly. It's like, I know what's going on in there.
Right. And so, like you mentioned, so you picked up bass and guitar at the same time? Or did you pick guitar first?
It was guitar first because my oldest sister had had a classical guitar.
Okay.
And when I wanted to start playing, my parents were like, no, like, you have this guitar. You can just play on that and we'll see if you stick with it or not.
Right.
And I was like, but I can't. Like, this is a classical guitar.
Yeah,
like,
am I going to play it? I want a shredder.
Yeah. So I played on that for a little while, and then they finally let me get a bass.
Okay.
And I got it because bass was really my first instrument. I wanted to play bass because I loved Adam Clayton.
From you too.
Yes.
Right.
So,
Why, and I mean, for the time that you were getting into that, it makes sense because, I mean, you know, U2 was ostensibly, and, you know, still arguably one of the biggest rock bands in the world. What drew you to like U2? Cause that's just kind of a, was it just them being played in the radio and you were just like,
yeah, I think I heard a song
and then
I started listening to more of like their old stuff and I really liked the old stuff. I don't know why. Like, I never liked a band that much in my life.
Right.
And then just something happened. I was like obsessed with them. I had like pictures all over my wall of them. And like,
it's amazing that you were like Edge, Bono, no, Adam.
I know.
I'm going to go ahead and skip over the two most visible people in the band and go for the guy that most people don't even know.
I think that's why. I was like, let me pick the obscure one.
Totally. Everyone else is going to these guys. Yeah. I got that guy.
Yeah. So, I wrote him like letters. I think I sent him like, I drew like a
picture.
Did
you ever get a response?
I always got like fan club responses.
Yeah.
So,
sure.
Yeah, I was pretty obsessed, but I had like a whole like video collection of all like different videos, and my mom threw it all out, unfortunately. But I still have a lot of like their like rare like 12 inches and stuff.
Of course,
that I saved. So I started playing bass, and I learned like I could play every single U2 song off every album through Rattle and Hum at one point.
That's impressive.
And sometimes on like a Sunday, I would start with Boy, and I would play through every album.
Dude, that's amazing. Yeah. You're just like, you know what? I got my whole Sunday planned.
Exactly. And then, you know, once that got too easy for me, then it was, you know, that's when I moved on to like Led Zeppelin songs.
Sure, more challenging stuff.
Yes, right. Guns N' Roses. And this was all before I knew hardcore.
Yeah, of course, right. So, you knew that you liked music and you were just exploring it and finding yourself.
Yeah.
Was there ever, like, did you care about school? Was there any other, you know, did you play sports? Like, did you have other interests beside this? Or was music kind of just your guiding?
I was in a pretty intense school, so it was always like, I wouldn't go, I mean, granted, I was young then, I wasn't like going out to do anything, but I would make sure like I would get all my homework done like Friday night and like Saturday morning, basically so I could spend the rest of my weekend playing bass.
Playing bass, right. You could play, you need enough time to go through all the records.
There's a lot of records. I did swim in school. Okay. I was on the swim team. I was on the water polo team.
Okay.
And I think at one point I did some like, there was like a drawing journal at school that I contributed some things to.
Okay.
And I think that was about all I
but
was doing.
But music was kind of like the guiding passion. Like the, oh, you yeah. were doing
Once
other
I found
things.
It, yeah. I mean, okay. I played piano too because I'd played piano since I was six. So okay. I was still playing piano. But that's music too. Just
it
classical.
Is. Yeah, yeah. You're probably playing in recitals, I'm guessing, as well? Or
yeah, just
more...
once a year.
Right,
it
right.
wasn't. It was, I wasn't doing too much as far as like playing in front of people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But my main focus was just once I started playing, it was just like practicing all the time.
And sure. Where, I mean, you know, I get why people practice, especially when they're younger.
Are you cold? Are you okay?
No, I'm perfect.
All right, sorry.
No, it's okay. But I mean, it sounds like a very, a rigorous workout that you put yourself through in regards to your instruments. Like it wasn't just like a matter of like, oh yeah, I'll play for half an hour.
Because I didn't know punk rock yet. So I thought, you know, right. I didn't know that.
So you
I
needed
just...
to perfect it. Okay.
I was like, I need to know all my modes and all my scales. And
okay.
Actually, and in high school, I was in the jazz band.
Okay.
We had like a little jazz ensemble at my school that I was the bass player or one of the bass players for.
Nice.
So then I had to learn all my jazz scales and be right. able to like improvise and do like my bass solo. In there
sure,
and stuff.
Sure.
So there was, you know, but it was like once I found punk rock and especially with guitar, mm-hmm. like guitar was sort of just an afterthought for me for playing.
Right.
Cause I learned I could play like power chords sort of,
right.
but it wasn't until Indecision I even learned how to like palm mute properly. So
you're like this guitar, like bass, I got down pat
yeah.
guitar. I don't care.
Yeah.
I'm just going to trip into this and figure
yep.
it out as I go along.
Yeah.
Interesting that the, yeah, just, I mean, I just like the, would you classify yourself as a perfectionist in any capacity? I mean, it sounds like.
No.
Okay. But you do have, you strike me as having a work ethic. Like
I have, yeah, no, I do have a strong, pretty strong work ethic.
Okay.
But that, I don't know. It was just because I wanted to play bass. I was very focused on being
right.
a good bass player.
Right.
And, I didn't want to be the kind of bass player that just followed along with the guitar player. And
sure.
I didn't want to be like a guitar player who thinks they can play bass. Have so many guitar players like, oh, I'll just play bass. It's
oh, absolutely. They're like two
so,
less strings.
Yeah.
Easy.
So I didn't want to be like that either.
Got it.
So I took it very seriously.
Yeah. Yeah. I could tell. And then as you started to, you know, progress through high school and, you know, started to, you know, get a hold of yourself as far as all the dark places that you were going through, did you have a notion of, you know, like career and like what you want, you know, going to college and all that sort of stuff? Was that,
well, when I first started school, I think I was like, I'm going to be in the music business. And I was like,
right.
going to be a music business major, which I'm so glad I didn't do.
Yeah. It's like burning money in a corner.
So I did that for like, well, first I ended up at UC Berkeley for a semester first. And then I wasn't happy there, so then I ended up at NYU.
Okay.
And that's where I did music business for a year, and then I'm just like, nah, I don't want to do this. So then I transferred just into the general arts and sciences school.
Okay.
And I didn't really know what to do at that point.
Just kind of biding your time.
Yeah, but then I had to pick a major, and at the time, I was super into SimCity.
Oh, it's a great game.
I was like, I think I'd really like to do urban planning.
Yeah, civil engineer, right?
Yeah. Well, see, civil engineering would have been a better choice. I think I would have liked that.
Sure.
But basic urban planning.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
So I ended up as an urban planning major / architecture.
Wow.
Like, it was more architectural history. I never got to actually design anything.
Sure.
I never got to plan anything in my studies at
right.
school.
It Besides was, SimCity, of course. Right.
Yeah.
great yeah. cities. Probably really practical,
yes.
I'm sure.
So I did that, and then I had taken it. At that point, I think I had joined Indecision somewhere in... Don't eat that. Hey. Come on. Somewhere in college. Space. What is he doing?
He looks like he wants that avocado tree
oh,
right there.
Okay. Yeah. So where was I? Oh, yeah. So I think I took a semester off to tour first with SFA and then came back. And I think I just had to, like, finish some random credits here and there. So I decided to take chemistry.
Okay.
Because I was like, oh, I don't think I really want to do urban planning. So
sure.
what am I going to do? So I... took chemistry and really liked it, and so
and then that's off. When you started to gravitate towards
yeah because I think in my high school I didn't do that well in science. I was like, oh, I can't be a science major, I'm just not good at this,
right.
And then realized that I just had crappy teachers
Sure, yeah, that definitely. That definitely. So many times where you, especially when you reflect back on your learning, where you're just like, oh yeah, like I probably would have liked that if I had a teacher that wasn't terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. So, so then I ended up just taking all the courses to get into medical school because at that point I was like, I'm going to go be a medical examiner.
Right. Because I always remember too, where it's just like, I mean, you know, within the fun game of telephone and hardcore and people that, it's like, oh yeah, like, you know, like people in indecision are like doctors and really smart and shit. Like, you know, I'm exaggerating, but it was just always one of those things where like, if, you know, people in a band had some, you know, I mean like 18 Visions was just like, oh yeah, they're a bunch of hairstylists, like, which yes was true, but like, it's always exaggerated to, you know, the umpteenth degree.
Javier cut my hair last week.
Right there. Exactly. but it's just so funny how like that. I mean, that word spreads, and then people, I imagine that people probably came into conversations with you kind of preloaded where they was just like, oh, like Rachel's probably really
people
smart.
Thought I was a coroner for a while, I think.
Oh, okay.
And it was just fine.
Sure, you're like, I'll take that.
But yeah, so then I ended up going to medical school for a couple months during Most Precious Blood.
Okay.
Which you can't really be in the band and go to medical school.
That's it. Next to impossible.
Yeah. You can't live an hour from your medical school.
Right.
So that I had to finally just make a choice, either like drop out and keep touring or quit the band and focus on school.
Right.
I'm going to drop out.
Sure.
Touring.
You're like, I'm going to drop out because we got to go to South Africa.
So, you know, some people might question that decision that, you know, and it's like I worked really hard to get that far and to get in and do all that work. And then, but then ultimately I was like, I'm not going to have these chances again in life. And you know what? If I really want to go back to medical school, I can get
it. Right. It's going to be there.
Yeah.
Right.
So.
Yeah, that profession is not going anywhere.
Yeah.
But my lifetime in a band like that,
yeah,
that
that's
may
fleeting.
Not. Right. I gotta harness that while I can.
Yeah.
You know, you also did, I mean, you've spoken about this in other interviews, but the, you know, radio show that you did on WNYU.
Yes.
That was
come on, stop beating that.
I'm guessing very formative in regards to your ability to, I guess, like have some sort of influence on the people that were, you know, listening, whether it's like a very small amount of people, but like, did you feel that kind of this sounds very grand, but like responsibility on like, hey, this is the stuff I'm going to play, like I just want to expose these bands, or is it just basically like
a little bit, like I feel like I helped Indecision a little bit.
Sure.
By like, you know, they I don't think they'd played out of Brooklyn all that much by the time I met them, and
right,
you know, I started playing them a lot, and then I was more part of, like, they were more like the Brooklyn scene. I didn't really go to Brooklyn, and I was more part of the
Manhattan scene. Yes.
And I, you know, through the radio show, I got it, I knew a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely tried to push them a lot, and I think I helped a little bit.
Right. Was that an exciting time for you to kind of have that platform?
Or was it just
fun?
That was another thing I fell into. It was just like when I got to NYU, I was just, oh well, maybe I'll go do a radio show. I don't know. I didn't really know what to do. So I was doing Crystal Chaos on AM, and then when Johnny Stiff was kicked off, they were just like, okay, you're on FM. I was like, what? I was like, I've been doing this for like 2 months. I'm terrible. And like, I was really bad. I wasn't a good DJ.
Right.
I mean, talking wise, I was bad. And
sure.
So I think the music I thought was fine.
Sure.
When I played, I liked what I played. I don't know if other people did. But
you stumbled through it.
Yeah, exactly. Stumbled through it for about 4 years and, you know, would have very, you know, I got to meet a lot of people through it. So I was thankful for it in that way. And we got to have so many cool bands come up and play.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was always a lot of fun.
Right.
And always a lot of trouble for me because every band would bring way too many people.
Oh,
and the guard would always be like, they can only have 6 people up there. And then he would come up. And I remember they like sometimes bands like smoking pot up there and like drinking. And like, I'm like, this is still a school.
Right, guys.
Like, I'm really sorry. I remember like this band Disassociate. They were friends of mine. And they came up and played. I was like, guys, I was like, just please do not smoke pot. Like, this is a school. Like, I could get kicked out of school for this. Like, just please don't.
Let's
I just remember, like, Ralphie. And I was like, staring at me, like, start smoking a joint. Like, and I went in there. I had a can of air freshener. And I opened the door while they're playing. I start spraying air freshener all over
them. It's amazing.
because I was so mad.
Sure. You're like, this is what you get.
Oh, yep. I remember Ralphie was pretty mad at me for a while.
Sure. But you're like, I have to make it seem like I am doing everything I can to stop you from smoking, even though I told you already you should not smoke in the school.
Like, it's a school. It's in a school building where there are students and they hold classes. And
right. This is like, this is a university.
Yeah.
Like,
it's not legal in New York.
Right. There are
California.
Many, many years away
Colorado,
from that.
Yeah.
And so the times in which you felt like, either indecision or most precious blood, had momentum and people were paying attention to you. Like, did you handle any of the business aspects of any of your bands?
I did all of it.
Okay. That's what I thought.
I don't know how I ended up with it, why they thought that was a good idea.
Right.
But, it was basically,
booking, doing like label correspondence.
I didn't do the book. I didn't really do the booking. Okay. It was basically, I handled all the money on tour.
Okay.
Sort of anytime there was a problem or we got ourselves into some kind of situation, everyone was like, Rachel, what do we do? And then, I would have Justin there to sort of help, but basically it always fell on us anytime there was a situation. Like, how do we get out of this? And
so you were the problem solver.
Yes. The money business part of it, not the booking, not like the glory parts of it, doing the interviews. I didn't do that many interviews.
Right.
I got the fun stuff.
Right. You were the person that was making the deposits at the bank. And you were the one that was like getting...
to change the money and booking flights and...
Right. Tour manager duties in a way.
Yeah, when we would get, pulled over at borders and held, like, what do we do? When the van would break down, how do we get out of this?
Were you ordering merch as well?
Yeah, yes. Did that. Sold it a lot of times.
Did you enjoy that aspect of it? Sorry.
I hope this comes out on here.
It's funny.
Some of it, yeah.
Yeah.
Because it gave me a certain amount of control knowing what was going on.
Sure.
And but then at the same time, like, there were times when there was a problem where we were like in a really bad situation. I didn't want to have to be in the middle. I wanted to be the person who could just sort of
just duck away.
Sit on the sidewalk and be like, oh, okay, I'm just going to wait here until someone else figures out what we're going to do.
Totally.
So I sort of miss that. I always sort of wanted to be that person.
Right. Yeah. You want to be able to just be like fade into the background and be like, well,
I'll just be over here until you figure that out.
Right.
But never had that luxury.
And did you, once you had moments in which you were playing larger shows and, like I said, people were paying attention to what you were doing, do you have any moments that kind of stick out in your head where it was just like, it could be something as small as like, oh my gosh, like we played in front of, 40 people in Omaha, Nebraska, like, or, it could be something as small as that, or, a larger show that you've played, when did you kind of like have those sort of out of body moments where you're just like, wow, this is pretty cool. Like what we're doing here.
I probably some of like the, or like, I guess when I, because there were some crazy shows with Indecision before I was in the band where I would watch and just be like, oh, I was like, I wish I was playing with them.
Right.
So I guess some of like the early shows with them, because it was sort of my first experience being in a band that people liked.
Right. that people paid attention to.
Yeah, I mean,
right.
Millhouse was all like, Millhouse, we had some shows, but Millhouse, that took
it's an acquired taste.
Exactly. Yes. So, I liked playing in Millhouse. It was fun and, crazy because Artie was always,
crazy.
Yeah.
Right.
But I guess that was sort of my first taste of like being in a band that, people are like jumping off the stage and sort of going crazy too. And I was like, wow, this is pretty cool.
Right.
So I don't know, maybe like my first like real show with them was at the bank in New York. And I think it was like a Revelation showcase.
Oh, okay.
Possibly, if I remember right. And, I was like, okay. I was like, well, I'm finally up here, like playing a show with them. And so,
yeah, that felt,
it was cool.
Right. And as you were doing all this and, like we were joking about earlier, making questionable decisions on continuing school or dropping out and playing in a band, how are your parents dealing with all of this weird stuff that you were doing? Because I'm sure that they were just like, what is Rachel into? Yeah. This is insane.
I thought
we had this all kind of handled at one point, and then now she's getting into like even weirder stuff.
Yeah,
it's fine.
they handled it surprisingly well. They've always been like really understanding, and I don't know if it comes from them just being so afraid of losing me in high school that it was just like, okay, you know, she cares
about something.
Yeah,
right.
She's happy. She's, you know, doing something.
Right.
You know, it's, you know, sort of constructive and
right.
And I think after Indecision broke up, like they thought that was going to be it. Sort of, they're like, okay, she has it out of her system now. But then it's like, okay, I'm like, well, no, I'm going to go do this again. And, you know, I know that it, I think they took it hard, like, when I dropped out of medical school. I think, you know, they were pretty disappointed by
right.
that, even though they were just like, okay, it's your decision. If that's what you want to do, it's okay.
Right.
But I know that I think they were pretty upset over it, but...
But maybe didn't outwardly display it to you constantly.
Yeah. No, they, like, they've just been really, really supportive. I've been lucky because, you know, doing things that I've done where I just, you know, had all the opportunities in the world to, you know, have some like crazy fancy job and me just constantly sort of pushing it away, being like, that's not what I want. I don't have that kind of mindset, even though I went to school with a bunch of people who are just out like, you know, you're going to go to school, then you're going to have to go to an Ivy League college and
right.
then you're going to get some, you know, $1 million paying job. And that's like your route.
That's the path.
And,
yeah.
And I could never, that was never where I wanted to
yeah.
be.
You're like, if that is eventually where I'm going to be, that's fine. But I'm not going down that path like right now.
Yeah.
Right. The idea, I mean, because for a while there with Most Precious Blood, like you said, you were touring and being able to, you know, make a living as far as like you would come home and you didn't have to immediately like land and,
yeah.
you know, work a temp job or whatever. Was that, did that take any of the, I guess, fun out of it in regards to, because, you know, anytime you start to kind of mix the, you know, art and commerce, like there's mm-hmm. always that that push and pull of like, this is cool, but then it feels like I'm like clocking in. And like, was that just because you guys didn't really have any of that prior experience with Indecision? Like, was that a weird notion when you started to get to that level?
It definitely was. And that's sort of what started happening in the end, is that we were touring because we needed to tour to make money, and the tours were not doing well, and
right.
like we're just like, what are we doing? Like, this is not, we're not having fun anymore. This is just like a business. We're just here,
right?
And our hearts aren't fully into it anymore. So definitely, like, I mean, I still worked on and off, but with Most Precious, well, I worked at a screen printing shop in New Jersey for a while.
Okay,
that definitely, like, they completely would hook us up and let me print all the Most Precious Blood merch.
It's perfect.
After hours, so... so I would just, you know, so I would make some money here and there, and I would go work there when I needed.
Right.
And also I was working at the medical examiner's office on and off.
So they'd allow you to kind of, like, duck back in and out.
It was more towards the beginning, because it was, like, from... I was there from 2001 to 2003.
Okay.
So... I pretty much left when I was supposed to be starting medical school. And at that point, we hadn't done any super long tours. I was just a college aide. So, yeah, I'd be like, I'm going to be gone for a few weeks and I'll be back. So it wasn't like they were, you know, super dependent on me for anything.
Right, right, right.
So it was just like they would miss the person that they could give their... some of their autopsies right. too.
Okay, you gotta,
yeah.
Where's Ray? Oh man, yeah. She's gone again.
That's, oh, there's a really horrible decomp case. Right. Like, where's she?
Yeah, the worst of the worst. That's yeah. gonna go to Rachel, and she'll be able to take yeah. care of that. And did, on that same note, was it easy for you to, I guess, kind of step into those, you know, really bizarre situations of, you know, looking at these, you know, these bodies that most people would, like, you know, throw up immediately? Like, was there any?
I mean, I always remember, like, my first time there when I was given, like, a tour, and I always remember walking in there into the, it was, like, in the morning, and it was, like, during their daily tour of, like, the gig they go through, and each person presents their case
okay.
for the day. And I remember these two men had been shot in a park, I forget which way, maybe like Riverside Park in New York, and they had been sitting on a bench. So they died sitting on a bench. I didn't, and I knew about rigor mortis and stuff,
oh, yeah.
but I go in and the men are had their backs on the table, but their legs and arms are sort of like in the air because of
the position. Yeah. Yeah.
They hadn't broken the rigor yet. And I look at them like, oh my God.
Yeah. They're sitting, yeah. But not.
So I just remember walking by and being like, holy shit. Like, right. This is crazy. And definitely like the first few times that like seeing an autopsy and like seeing everything up close and holding people's organs and everything, I was like, this is crazy.
Right.
And, but then it just sort of became more like,
right.
Got used to it.
Right. Right.
Yeah. And I'll just the whole process of it was just like, okay, this, you know, as I did more and more and they let me do more and more. Mm-hmm. I realized, okay, I'm fine with doing this, so this is good.
Sure. Yeah, it becomes clinical, and it becomes, rather than a human, it's, you know, essentially an object.
Yeah.
I mean, and not like, that sounds cold, but...
You have to separate yourself to a certain extent. Not fully, because you always have to remember that, like, these were people, a lot of them had families who were really upset, so you always have to be respectful.
Of course.
And it's the same thing with, even just with... through my job now, just with surgical pathology, you know, you're just getting organs, but at the same time, you still, like, you might get like, oh, like this breast has like so many tumors and it's such a pain, I hate it. But you have to remember, like, that was on some poor woman's body who's dealing with cancer, and
right.
You always have to remember there's a patient on the other end of it.
That's as true. Yeah. There's always a story attached, yes, to every single
one
of these things.
You need to disconnect a certain amount, because, like, you know, all the cancer cases we see, it can drive you crazy thinking like, oh my God.
So the whole,
like,
world is cancer.
Yeah.
Yes.
I could have a million cancers growing in my body right now, not even realize it.
Right.
So there's the disconnect, but you always remember that there is a patient there. So,
right, right,
even though
right.
You don't see him directly.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's interesting. It's just, it's something that, you know, everybody confronts, but, you know, so few people feel the connection to be able to, like, pursue that and then, like, land in it and be able to feel like they are still able to, like, remain a human being. And, like, because, I mean, some people just get, like, lost in that sort of, you know, that they either lose that human connection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and it's just kind of, you're just going through the motions.
Especially with autopsies. When you're doing autopsies daily, it can be very easy to, like, you know, especially when you see, like, children and,
right,
like, horrible accidents and shootings and stabbings. And then all of September 11th, like, seeing all that and seeing a plane crash and seeing just everything, right. You're just thinking, like, all, you just know, like, every possible way to die, what it looks like.
Sure.
And, but you still have to live your life, and you can't always be thinking you're going to die at the next, you know.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Right. I mean, yeah, there's no way that you can avoid the mortality that is in front of you on the tables.
Yeah.
But then you also have to be able to, like you said, shut the door on it.
Yeah, and go about your life.
And exist, right. And be like, okay, like, I'm going to have lunch now. Yeah. And, like, I'm going to do these things.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
All right, I want to tell you and interrupt this awesome conversation with Rachel about a podcast that I am a big fan of, because I think that's people that listen to podcasts want to know more about other shows, and this show is spectacular. It's called The Future of What. It is hosted by Portia Sabin, who is the proprietor and owner or president, I can't remember her title, of Kill Rock Stars, which is actually a future guest on this show coming up next week, if I'm not mistaken. The show is a in-depth discussion with people who are involved in independent music, but more on the industry side of things. You know, these are people that work at record labels that are making, you know, some future-based decisions. And it's a lot of awesome, awesome in-depth discussion in regards to the music industry as a whole. And some of the upcoming guests they have, it's with Open Mike Eagle, Top Shelf Records, and then a peek at how songs make it onto hit shows like Atlanta and other television placements, because people are just like, how does that happen? And it's like, does someone just like randomly pick songs? It's like, no, there's a methodical process that gets put into this. So anyways, you can find The Future of What online at killrockstars.com/thefutureofwhat or on your favorite podcast app. They are part of the Jabberjaw Media Network, and I love that they are a part of it. So the show's great. Check it out.
And I think the crowd back then, it was no big deal. Like, nobody ever made a really big deal about me being a girl back then.
Right.
At least I didn't feel like it, like no one ever said anything to me. Really.
Sure. But I guess more so from the perspective of, just like I said, the attention that you were getting.
I didn't get that much attention back then. Maybe like on, like when we toured with like Sick of It All, maybe in like Europe, maybe like a little bit more. And in Europe, like, I think it was a little bit more of a bigger deal over there. So yeah, sometimes a little bit more attention over there.
Right.
But I've always been like very shy and very like, I don't like to be in crowds. I don't like to really be in front of people.
Right.
So
perfect combo for a band.
Yeah. So the fact that I ended up even being able to play in a band was sort of a big deal, to be able to be comfortable. And I was very uncomfortable on stage during Indecision. I think there was a big, like, if you look at me playing with Indecision as opposed to like Most Precious Blood, there definitely was something that changed in me that I was just like, fuck it, I'm not going to be so self-conscious. I don't care
it's
anymore.
A sure, sure.
And I'm more comfortable with myself now that, you know, that I'm not just going to like stand here and sort of like play my guitar and be like the quiet girl on the side of the stage. Just
right.
Standing
totally.
There. Especially like, and that was weird with Indecision because, you know, between Justin and Bago, especially them swinging their guitars everywhere, it was sort of more like I had to sort of stay out of the way if I didn't want to get hit by a bass.
Right. That's true. Yeah.
So I guess with Most Precious Blood, it was, yeah, I experienced that definitely more. And
yeah.
And it was weird, but at the same time, like, Justin and I broke up in 2001 while Most Precious Blood was together. So it was sort of like, okay, well, now I'm single, so you know what? If I want to,
right.
You know, I can do whatever I want now, basically. But at the same time, it's hard to do whatever you want when your ex-boyfriend is on tour with you.
Totally, 50 feet away from you at any given time.
Yeah. So it was a complicated situation. And then yeah, so I can't say like I wasn't, you know, didn't, you know, guys do shit all the time when they're in bands.
Absolutely.
And, you know, so I can't say that I didn't indulge in, you know,
things
here and there while I was single. And
sure.
And just like sort of being comfortable with the attention for once in my life, being like, oh, it's okay. You know, this is sort of cool. Like, because I went from being someone who in high school was like the weirdo person who had like a few friends, but it was always just like, you know,
right,
hidden away. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I understand completely where you're coming from. Yeah. I mean, it's nice to be able to be like, oh wow. Like that person like thinks I'm cool for whatever reason. Yeah.
And I mean, I knew it was all because they're like, oh, it's a girl playing guitar.
Of course.
And,
right. You know,
but at the same time, it was like, playing guitar was still never the same thing as being a girl who's a singer in the band.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
So
it's always a sliding scale.
Yeah,
right.
That was always the biggest thing. If you played an instrument, it was always just like, oh, well, you know, that's cool.
It's a cool vibe, right? Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's like, oh, you sing for a band. Whoa. Yeah. That's a big deal. last thing I want to hit on was the, actually kind of what we were talking about before we turn on the mics was in regards to, just because you live in a world of, you know, medicine and people that don't have any similar life experience to you in regards to like, you know, being involved in subculture. I mean, I presume that there are some people that you've run across where it's mm-hmm. just like, oh yeah, like they're, you
there's
know.
A few out there. There's right. a few hardcore girls actually, mainly because it's mainly girls who do my profession.
Right.
And yes, I've met a couple of girls who are also into hardcore.
Right.
Which is cool.
But I'm guessing that a majority of people, you know, clearly don't have that same experience. So like once they, you know, get to know you on some level and realize like, oh, you got tattoos and like, you know, is it funny for people to just be like, know you in one instance and then like get a little sliver of what you were in playing in bands and stuff like that and just being like,
yeah, it's sort of funny. Cause like at work, I'll like tell stories of like being on tour and stuff. And a lot of them, they don't really know like,
what that means.
Yeah, like what I really did. And sometimes like I'll tell them, oh well, you know, if you want to see what it's like, look up my band name. Like I used to be sort of shy about it, and I'm like, I don't care. Because sure. sometimes like they would say, I saw this video of you playing, oh my god, it was crazy. Like
right
like, I can't believe that's you.
totally
But now I think it's funny because you know, I love telling tour stories to people who just like, they're like, what?
Like, yeah, what does that mean?
Yeah, because we have so many crazy tour stories and I'll just randomly like, well, when I was here and you know, we just saw this and this or this happened, and they're like, wait, were you where? And like I think when I tell people that I used to tour, they think like, oh, I used to play like shows on the weekends here and there. I was like, no, I've been like yeah. all over the place.
Right. I've traveled the U.S. like 27 times.
Yeah.
You
know,
yeah.
It's like I've been to, you know, five continents and they're like, whatever.
Totally. Well, because people hear the idea of tour, and especially it's like, if they haven't heard of your band, they think that a tour consists of like, you know, playing three shows at like local bars yeah. or whatever. It's like you're a cover band.
Yeah. It's definitely hard to explain. People ask what kind of music that we play. I'll be like, oh, well, it was like, it's like metal, but not exactly.
Right.
Because I know they don't really, I'm going to say, oh, well, I played hardcore. They like, either think it's like techno.
Exactly.
Or I don't think of like porn or something.
Exactly.
Like,
right.
So I know that they just won't quite get it.
Right.
So
I just always explain it where it's just like, it's really loud. It's yeah. really loud. And yeah, do you like screaming?
Yeah. It's like yeah. metal, but not a lot of solos and all screaming. There's not a lot of singing.
Yeah. There's melody, but not in the vocals.
Yeah. Yeah, it was funny because the other day at work, because I had been telling one of my friends at work about K9us.
Sure.
And he's like, wait, you have a band that your dog's singing? He's like, what do you mean? And I was like,
you're like, well,
let me play it for you. And he actually is probably the one person there who knows like the most, like we have not a lot of similar tastes, but he knows a lot of bands.
That's
so
good.
He understood like what he got like what the style was that we were going for.
That's perfect. He was like, yeah, so death metal influenced dog vocals. Yeah.
So I was like, look, we were like, K9us was voted number one band without people.
Yeah.
Like some website like had put down like some top something list, and K9us was number one band with non-human members.
Oh, that's spectacular.
So it's always fun.
I wonder who you beat.
Hatebeak was second.
Oh wow! Okay, yep, that makes sense.
And I think Sisters of Mercy was in there because they had a name for their sequencer was named like Alice or something.
Yeah, Lydia. So I'm sure.
Yeah. So they were in there, but we beat them.
That's good. Yeah, yeah,
I'm
yeah.
a big fan of Sisters of Mercy.
Yeah, claim to fame right there.
Yeah, I forget who, and there was some other bands. I was like, I don't know what this is.
Right, right. The last thing I wanted to ask was the you know, because you, I mean, you still care about hardcore and punk and you're still, you know, involved from that perspective, you know, going to shows and stuff, like not actively.
Sort of here and there.
Well, but I mean,
I don't know when shows have, I'm so out of touch with shows, and like now that I'm in California,
right.
I don't have the same connections to like always know when a show is happening.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, you still care about it. You still,
oh
you know,
yeah. Like, I still listen to it. I still.
Right. Exactly. You know, what, I guess what keeps you still, I guess, engaged and active at all? Because I mean, it's very easy for people to kind of shut that off, where it's just like, oh, if I'm not like doing it, you know, 24/7, that I just, you know, there's clearly other things to pay attention to. But you know, what keeps you engaged?
Because I still the bands who I've loved forever, like I still love them and
right.
still want to listen to them, still want to go see them. And it just, you know, it just becomes part of who you are, where it's like, I'm not going to all of a sudden go to like a Celine Dion concert right. or something.
let's try the other side. Right, yeah. Right.
It's just, I don't know. It's sort of like, I like the music that I like, and I'm a bit narrow-minded in that way. And like, whereas Derek, my boyfriend, will, you know, he's very open-minded to a lot of different music. I'm sort of more like, well, I don't like that kind of thing.
Right.
Like, this is what I'm going to listen to. And it's just, I just don't relate with a lot of other styles of music. I mean, I listen to like sometimes like dark wave and a lot of like 80s pop, but more because it reminds me of my sister and growing up and all like the 80s pop bands that she loves. So
right
that's why I listen to that a lot of times too. But it's just, I don't relate to other things. Like I guess I haven't even been to another show that's not like a hardcore or a metal show.
Right.
Aside from maybe like a goth show.
Sure, that's like, yeah,
but
I mean,
that's still sort of similar.
Yeah,
it's the same
umbrella,
realm.
Right.
So I don't feel like I belong there. It's like still at a hardcore show, even though I might feel old.
Yeah, sure, of course.
I still feel like, okay, I feel comfortable.
You're like, it's what I know.
Aside from being surrounded by people sometimes where I'm just like, oh my
right,
God,
right.
like, get me out of here.
You're like, this is enough. Please,
yeah.
please back off. Right.
And still the same whole, like, coming from indecision, the whole DIY mentality is still ingrained in me today, I don't know, just like that whole sense of, you know, if you don't know how to do something, just learn to do it yourself.
Right.
I still do it to this day with making dog collars.
Right,
stuff.
Right,
it's like,
right.
Just I can't change that mindset. Like like when I had a house in New Jersey, just I remodeled a bathroom. I did wood flooring. Like, it's just like, well, I don't want to pay someone because I don't have the money, so I'm going to learn how to do it myself.
Sure, sure. Like, I'll put two and two together and figure this out.
So just the whole hardcore DIY mindset is just ingrained in me for so long that it's sort of the only way I sort of know how to be.
Right. It's the only way that you view the world.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's just...
Yeah.
So that's why it's always, you know, hardcore is always... I'm never going to be like, I'm not...
Right, I'm washing my hands of it.
Maybe when I'm like 60, maybe I might not be going to shows that much.
Yeah, but still, yeah, you've spent a good enough time.
Yeah, but I'll probably still be listening to it.
Right, exactly, right. You're just like, I'm not going to be checking out new records, but I got my old records and they're totally fine.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Rachel.
This was fun.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. Thank you very much for the atmosphere and the dogs. It was beautiful.
I hope their vocals came out.
I think they absolutely did.
There you have it. That was Rachel, and so much fun, right? She was a great conversation. And this is exactly why I love doing this show, because here you have people that are, you know, deeply, deeply involved in independent music and are able to take those ideas that they've learned and apply it to, you know, so many different fields of their professional and working and personal lives. Because, like, I so distinctly remember, I apologize that I can't remember the actual band or the lead singer that expressed this thought, but it really impacted me at a young age. I do remember the venue. I was at the Showcase Theater in Corona, California. And the notion of taking these ideas that we learn within, you know, the independent music scene, sometimes not even really attached to a specific philosophy. It's not saying that, like, you know, hey, take straight edge and spread it to the masses, or take, you know, this particular, you know, Krishna philosophy and spread it to the masses. It's just the independent mindedness that many of us learn by going to these shows and then taking it out in the real world. Like, that is where actual change happens, you know? It's like, that's when the rubber hits the road, so to speak. And I just love that notion, and I love pulling on those threads and strings and being able to tie it all up in a pretty bow when I do these conversations. That's what I am super passionate about. That's why, I mean, we're sitting on almost 5 years worth of shows. Like, there's no reason for me to keep doing this. Like, yeah, I make some money off of it, but at the end of the day, this is a very labor-intensive thing, but I feel so passionate about it, that is why I bring them to you. So, whew, all right, calm down, Ray. All right, take a deep breath. But anyways, thank you very much for Rachel for having me over, and I hope you enjoyed that conversation. And her dogs, too. Like, just a great hang with her dogs. So, music, as always, is provided by Lowercase Noises. Like I said, pre-order the record at lowercasenoises.com. And please, CNN, come on. Thank you so much for sponsoring the show. I really, really appreciate it. And please, just tune in to their amazing soundtrack, 8-part miniseries, starting on this Thursday, the 20th of April at 10 p.m., no matter where you live, whether it's Pacific Standard Time, Eastern Standard Time, just tune in and do the damn thing. So, yeah, next week. Oh, yeah, that's right. I should tell you who's on the show, right? Because that's what I have been doing recently. And actually, I talked about this person's podcast in the middle of the show. It's called The Future of What? It's with Portia Sabin. She is the owner, president of Kill Rock Stars, the amazing record label out of the Pacific Northwest. And I brought her on the show, and it was such a good conversation. Like, we could have probably talked for about 2.5 hours and probably only covered, you know, maybe 10 years of her life. But anyways, that's who's on the show next week, and that will be the wrap of our amazing Women in Independent Music series, and I hope that you haven't enjoyed that. A different voice besides just a bunch of dudes talking about how awesome music is. So anyways, that is all, and please be safe, everybody.
You've been listening to the Jabberjaw Podcast Network, jabberjawmedia.com.
The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Trust me in saying that no matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all of the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.